When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? It's David. It's podcast time. I'm here, Mr. Davis. Socially distanced, but actual fact, I've kept my distance from him. I used to social distance from him when I didn't have to social distance from him. You know what I mean? How are you, Ed?
I'm good. I'm banjaxed this week.
Why are you banjaxed?
Oh, it was just one of those weeks. Loads of work, which is great. Not complaining. But one of my daughters turned 18 and I felt really sorry for her because she couldn't have the big 18th. You know, she couldn't mark it properly.
Could you think of anything worse than having your 18th sitting around the kitchen table looking at your dad?
But that's exactly what it was. So anyway, and then it was my anniversary, 21st anniversary, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
21st, I remember. Wow.
Yeah. Actually, do you know what? That was the night before you left my wedding early.
You're absolutely right.
It was your very first agenda gig. Do you remember that?
So that was 21 years ago. It was the very first time I was on TV in Ireland.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right.
Flanking it.
You weren't drinking at my wedding.
I know. Shocking. I know. I used to take my work seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Years ago.
Them were the days.
Exactly. I'm keen.
But you know, the funniest thing in all of that, the funniest thing I saw this week was the footage of our friend Rudy Giuliani leaking oil from his head in a press conference.
It was the dyed Barnett.
Yeah, are you rolling down his cheeks? And he apparently the whole press conference went on for ages and ages and he talked the greatest load of shite ever. But as it went on, there was more oil
leaking out of his head.
Straight out of some Buick or something.
Well, it's funny, you know, you talked about agenda. Did I tell you about the day that I interviewed Rudy Giuliani and Hillary Clinton on the same day?
Did you?
In the
really?
States, right? And Rudy Giuliani was mayor of New York. It was like 2002.
Yeah. This is when he was kind of...
He was a man.
Respected.
Yeah, he was Mayor Rudy and he'd wear the baseball cap and it was all 9/11 and all that sort of stuff. And he was talking about the fact that he'd made New York completely, you know, crime-free and all that sort of broken windows theory and all that sort of stuff, right? But it was a bizarre day because it was Giuliani in the morning in New York and then get a train to Washington to interview Hillary Clinton later on that afternoon. But Giuliani came out and there was something. I remember saying it to the producer, a woman called Sarah Binchy, after. I said, was he as weird as I thought it was? You know those kind of really starey eyes?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Really starey, in your face. And then he started to go on and on to me about Yasser Arafat.
Really? In what kind of way?
And the PLO and la la la. And then I looked at Sarah and said, does he think we're not Irish TV or Israeli TV? Because he was going on this big rant. But he was bizarre then.
But he was always one of those guys. And because of 9/11, the world saw him as this great leader, this great figure, bringing everyone together. Mayor Rudy. But actually, look at the history of this guy. He's a complete and utter nutjob who married his cousin. But anyway...
Did he marry his cousin?
Yeah, his first wife was his first or second cousin.
You serious?
Yeah.
Like, do you ever remember in the Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
Do you remember the great Donnie?
Donnie, yeah.
I married my cousin because she was good looking.
That's Rudy.
Oh, my God. Anyway, we move on.
Come here, listen to you. We got great reaction from last Thursday's podcast.
Yeah, the one about the small businesses and the banks. And
Flal Larkin from Haddington House.
Yeah, yeah.
It was brilliant.
No, it was. Originally from Windsor Park.
Indeed.
Or the ghetto that spawned us. Yeah, and it was very good. But actually, it struck me this morning. I read that AIB, the bank that we own, the state bank that the state is the major shareholder of.
Yeah.
We were talking last
week. The ones that back Brave.
Backing Brave, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about that, right? Last week, we spoke about the fact there's so many small businesses needing working capital to see them through this crisis in order for them not to default on loans and get back together. So you'd imagine that for the top brass of the state bank, that this would be central to their concerns, right? Was how to get the economy going, get finance into it. And of course, the fact that the ECB has made so much money available.
Yeah. We're
going to come back to that because we made a fundamental error last week.
Oh?
This error on sums. We were,
oh, man, you got the sums wrong.
Got the sums wrong. 6% of 1.5 trillion, which is what the ECB has already lent out, is 90 billion, not 9 billion.
Right. You just put the decimal point in the wrong place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, exactly. Doing the hard sums. So technically, 90 billion euros has been made available to the Irish banking system to lend to the Irish economy.
Yeah.
The Irish economy is about a 350 billion euro economy. So we're talking a phenomenal amount of money. We're talking a quarter or nigh on a third of the amount of GDP has been made available. So we should not have a credit crunch at all if the banks are doing their job. However, this week was revealed that AIB, top brass, are more concerned about buying a stockbroker, Good Buddy's stockbroker, than actually worrying about getting money into people's accounts.
Jesus Christ, why?
Okay, look, Good Buddy's stockbroker. Again, I have nothing against these guys. I don't know them, but I'm not against them. I've known one or two of the people who've worked in there, right?
Sure, sure, sure.
Good Buddy's stockbroker is an Irish stockbroker that has been hawked around the town for the last 5 years. Okay, they've been trying to sell themselves. They've had two deals with some Chinese outfit that didn't go well, right?
Right.
They were there, they were at the thing, they'd signed everything, right? So they're trying to flog themselves. Now, who wants to buy a stockbroker in Ireland? Nobody, except maybe one of our banks. Now, why would a bank want to buy a stockbroker? Usually if you want to sell a company, right? Like, like a financial company, you want to sell out because you want to get more capital to do bigger things, right?
Right.
But stockbrokers don't need capital because it's in the title. It's called broker. So a broker is somebody who's basically who doesn't need capital. You're broke, right? Yeah. You buy here, you sell there, you buy here. So you don't actually need a significant capital base, right? Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, what Irish stocks are there that are trading actively? Very, very few. Number three, Irish gilt market, the Irish government bond market, as we know now, is being backstopped by the ECB.
Right.
And then you think, well, mergers and acquisitions, is there lots of M&A advisory? Yeah, but not a huge amount. Now, it strikes me, I could be wrong, but
I doubt it, Mike.
Likewise. Why would AIB want to buy Good Buddies? And let's go back to what we talked about last time, which is the credit cycle.
Yeah.
So AIB sold Good Buddies in 2012. It is now at a much...
Sorry, they were...
They used to own it.
Oh, right. I didn't realize it. Okay, right.
This is all the Irish inside fiction. Yeah. You talk to your mate, AIB. And the reason I can say this on the podcast is it's my money.
Yes.
Because we own AIB.
Yeah.
So I'm entitled to have an opinion on it, right? So AIB sell Good Buddies, right, in 2012 at a hugely, hugely discounted price. They're now going to buy it back at a hugely inflated price. The same asset where they don't need it.
Yeah. So I don't understand the logic behind this.
This is, remember I was talking about the idea of warehousing. So basically, as the credit cycle goes up and down, people take opportunity of the credit cycle, right? That's fine. That's the way the capitalist system works. But for the life of me, when the country is having a small business crisis in credit, AIB is the biggest bank in the country. It's also owned by the state.
Yeah.
Why the Minister for Finance would agree, as the major shareholder, would agree that AIB use our money to buy a stockbroker that it doesn't need, which seems to me it's nothing more than basically given the fellas in the stockbroking company who own it, the management,
right,
a payout. Because oh, no
for
strategic
Jesus sake.
So I'm just saying, it's interesting. Even though we talk about it in the podcast and people, it's still going on and on and on. Money being used, not where it's needed in the economy, but largely it's kind of an ego thing. It's a vanity.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of things then. Does this just show up the downside, as it were, of free money? So when interest rates hit zero or minus one, it's been used, it's been abused on this level.
That's a really good question, right? When interest rates go to zero, you should be able to sell your company to anyone.
Mm.
The fact that good buddies could only sell their company to the people who used to own it suggests something to me about the overall strategy.
Yeah.
Right? Because when interest rates are zero, you can borrow a huge amount, buy a company, generate the return from that company from the income,
yeah,
and it actually all looks square and all looks good. What it does tell me is that Irish banking is not doing what Irish banking should be doing.
I mean, you've said this before as well. So yeah, this is just another example of it.
It should be, you know, Irish banking, particularly a state-owned bank, should be an arm of macroeconomic policy orchestrated by a combination of the Department of Finance and the central bank.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we see is nothing of the sort. What we see is they put their efforts into buying a stockbroker, which actually nobody cares about, and it won't do one thing for the small businesses that actually need the cash.
And has Pascal or the Department of Finance actually given an explanation or, you know, even talked through their logic or the rationale?
No. So anyway, it's again.
So can we get them to give us some sort of explanation?
We know you're listening. We know you're down there in the bunker in Merrion Street. Give us a call.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So, ahead of all, what I was wanted to talk about this week was what you could be described as the quasi-permanent effects of COVID. What's going to happen? Now we know, John, the vaccine is here.
Yeah.
In fact, Dolly Parton financed the second vaccine.
Fair play to her.
I'm telling you.
Good on you, Dolly.
You got to play Dolly. You got to play Dolly.
Here's a bit.
Okay, but Dolly Parton financed the research into bit of the Moderna new vaccine, which is kind of cool, right? But the vaccine starts. The great thing is that now we're going to fight this disease using 21st century technology, not medieval technology. Like, you think about it, you know, social distancing was something the Venetians did in the Black Death, right?
Yeah.
The quarantine comes from the Italian expression quarantine, which is the 40-day isolation, which came from Ragusa, which is a republic, which is now Dubrovnik. But think about social distancing, quarantines. These are the Justinian plague. When we talk about Justinian plague, that's when social distancing started, because they'd figured out in the 6th century AD, look, We don't know what's going on here, but this disease is jumping from healthy to susceptible, so we should actually keep our distance, right?
I knew you'd come back to Justinian plague.
I'm telling you, me and Justin. Now, the point is, at least now we have science. We have the men in the white coats.
Yeah.
We have actually proper science that says, okay, we've got the vaccine. But the question is now, what is or what has been one of the significant changes in behavior that will become maybe permanent as a result of COVID? And one thing is, John, it's the end of the business trip.
Right. Talk to me about this.
I mean, I think it's something really significant, right? That I was talking to the chief executive of one of the biggest global financial corporations this week.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy said to me, John, the biggest budgetary change in this global multinational is business travel.
Right. But
they've cut it by 90% for next year.
Jesus. Right?
So it means
no. That's just for next year.
That's just for next year. But, you know, this is the point, is if they're doing it for next year, they do not believe that business travel is necessary.
Right.
Now, if you imagine a big multinational corporation, right, they have executives and managers flying everywhere all the time. So every airport lounge, every taxi company, every high-end bar, every boutique hotel, all of these people, all of this ecosystem is there to service business travel. And it seems to me that one of the permanent impacts of COVID and Zoom and meetings and all these apps is that head honchos believe that they don't need to send people around the world meeting each other. Now, they also said that it's probably cheaper for them to cut travel, at least psychologically, than cut headcount, than fire people.
Well, that's a good thing.
And number two, that all big corporations now want to be environmentally compliant.
Yeah.
And the idea of sending an executive around, you know the difference, those people who go left and right, John, on a plane.
I've never gone left. You're a lefty. I'm a righty. And just so, in case you don't know, left is first class. Right is economy.
Next time, John.
Coach. Don't they call it coach?
Coach, as the Americans call it. Right. But you only go business class because you're on somebody else's dime.
Yeah. You'd never dream of...
I would never go business class on myself.
Yeah.
But like if somebody else says we're going to fly a business...
Absolutely.
I make it absolutely, absolutely necessary.
Yeah. But with champagne.
Exactly. But the point is, John, if this is a change, it totally changes business culture. Totally changes it.
Yeah.
And the change in travel and the change in the way people do business.
Yeah.
I was just talking to Marla down in the Caribbean.
Marla Tukaran.
Exactly. And she was saying to me, well, actually, listen to what she was saying, but it's about digital nomads, people coming to the Caribbean to live for a year or two because they don't have to live anywhere else because they don't have to do the business travel. They can actually do it all on their computer, on their laptop. Let's talk to her. Marla, how are you?
I am great, David. Thanks for having me. And I'm not an old mate. I'm younger than you.
Whoa!
Much younger than me. But tell us, Marla, talk to me. Barbados and Caribbean countries are attracting in people in COVID, like workers, this digital... What are you doing?
Digital nomad. So, I mean, yeah, it's... So you know that most of us in the Caribbean are very heavily tourism dependent. I mean, we actually have in the Caribbean the most tourist-dependent nations in the world. There are only a few of us, like the commodity exporters like Trinidad, Suriname, and Guyana, that are not tourism-dependent. And so this lockdown, this pandemic has hit us really hard because, of course, travel is restricted and people don't want to quarantine and waste their vacation days and so on. So we have all of these tourism assets, let's just say, hotels, lots and lots of Airbnbs and so on that are pretty much empty. So we have a couple countries in the Caribbean where the authorities decided what we would do is we would invite digital nomads to come and live here for a year or two. So in Barbados, it's called the Welcome Stamp. Cayman has a similar offering. It's called the Global Citizen, I think. And then Bermuda has one as well, where basically you apply, you pay a fee. I think it's $2,000 for the one here in Barbados. And you come and you live here for a year. You, of course, benefit from the beautiful weather and sun, sea, sand. And you do your job from Barbados. Instead of work from home, you work from here. And
is it working? Are there lots of people coming down?
Yeah, there are quite a few. I've met a few, a lot of people in the tech space, obviously, because that's a space that I suppose by design is quite nomadic. You can work from anywhere. And other people as well. For example, there was, I heard somebody say there was a university that a whole class, the polo, water polo team came and they're living here. And so they're practicing their water polo here and they're attending online classes.
Jesus, John and I could take up water polo.
Well, we could. What about podcasters down there?
Podcasters.
That could be our new HQ.
That'd be very cool.
That'd be fantastic.
I tell you, I'll take the place I took Marta, St. John. We'll find the Red Legs in the back end of Barbados.
Excellent.
Remember that bar? What was the name of that bar?
Martin's Bay. It was in Martin's Bay. David, you didn't take me. I took you. You don't know Barbados, right? Let's just get that clear. You had a map that you didn't know if it was upside down or right.
Sign
up.
That'd be about right, yeah.
Yeah, that's people who know me, you know, it's like the public image of being quite together and the private image of...
Yeah, he'll say, stop here. And and then he gets out of the car, he goes into a bar. Half hour later, he comes back. I said, okay, so which direction do I go? He says, I don't know. I was just having a beer. You were supposed to find the directions.
You left her in the car. Jesus, Mike.
Listen, I said, let's go in. Let's find the direction. And then the guy started talking to me. I started chatting the whole thing, you know, whatever. We would talk to you soon. Take care.
Cheers, Marla.
Be safe.
Jeez, that's really interesting. Sure. We should consider going down there.
I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, in the sunshine, doing the podcast.
Lovely. Yeah, from the beach.
From the beach. Lovely. Nobody would know any different.
Anyway, so as I've always said before, business is personal. Business is not business. Business is personal.
Yeah.
And that means face to face.
Well, I tell you what we do. We break this down. Let's talk about the economics in a little bit, but let's now talk about the culture, right? Okay. Now, what I always noticed when I worked in big companies, not that I was particularly successful in big companies, it's not really my, there was travel bragging, what I call it, right? So this is the idea that business is personal. That basically, first of all, let's talk about the hierarchy, right? So a business trip is a perk of the job. Like, who doesn't like to fly business class, to get into the back of a cab, to be dropped to a hotel, to go down to the bar and order wine with somebody else's money?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the best crack, right? Gotta have the finest wine, right? Okay, and to be treated like an adult and do the deal and meet other people.
Yeah.
And you feel kind of important. You feel like, wow, I've arrived. This is good, you know, right? And I remember certainly in the companies, like the travel bragging, some fight comes into, oh my God, I'm just in from Hong Kong. I'm so tired. You know, the traffic in Milan is just awful. But I really do like that new airport in Seoul, right? And you're like, get out of here, man. Yeah. But it was always about the hierarchy in the company.
Yeah.
So basically, the foot soldiers were pushing pens in the office in their desk, right?
Yeah.
And then the non-commissioned officers were representing the company in Europe. And then the major players were representing the company around the world. So it was all this hierarchy. So it was all about bragging. And it actually, in one way, defined the hierarchy of the building. Who got to go where?
Yeah.
So there's a whole, as you would say, sub-business culture in hierarchy singing about whether you get to travel or not.
Yeah.
There's actually a very good song by Divine Comedy called Come Home, Billy Bird.
Oh, I knew it.
International business traveler, right? And it's about this geezer. You see him all the time in airports. It's usually him, but increasingly her as well. And you see him in the airport kind of sweating, a little bit hungover from the night in the tiles with the other, you know, global chiefs of this, you know, worldwide, this, that, and the other directors, right? And he's sweating, going through the airport, trying to make his flight a little bit toxic the next morning, right? This sort of geezer. But the point is, the whole world was made up of these people because people are on the move all the time.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting about meetings, there's one hierarchy, which is who gets to go to them.
Yeah.
But the real hierarchy, John, is the really, really important people don't go to meetings. The meetings come to them. You know, what I've been fascinated by over the last year odd is I'm reading a lot about hunter-gatherers and the role of fire in our existence as a species.
Yeah.
And the role of food and the role of eating and the etiquette, whose food it is, who provides it, who sits beside the boss man, all that sort of stuff. There's all these social signals that are sent by strange things And I'm looking at food amongst the hunter-gatherers at the moment, but it's the same idea. Like, corporations are like hunter-gatherers, right?
Yeah.
You eat what you kill. And who gets to travel is a big deal. But if that stops, it's going to have a profound impact on business, I think. Because as you said...
It was just, it's a huge ripple-out effect. You know, it's interesting, actually. CNN have a program presented by your man, Richard, whatever his name is.
Quest.
Quest, yes, Quest. And it's called The Business Traveller.
Well, that's what it's aimed at.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But the economics are really simple, right? For airlines, think about this. Less than 10% of every airline passenger is a business traveller. But they make 3/4 of all the profit of all the airlines.
Really? Wow.
So that's the difference. This is huge for the airline business, okay? Yeah. So if there's no business travel, lots and lots of airlines will go out of business. Now, the problem is the business traveler subsidized everybody else. If he or she is gone, the price of tickets is going to go through the roof.
Right.
Okay, so these are big things. And you think of traditional airlines. So airlines like Ryanair will love this because they hated the business traveler. They figured out a business model that actually jammed the plane without business travelers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what you're going to see is like all those airlines that did this, you know, London to Hong Kong, London to LA. No normal person flies London to Hong Kong. They fly London to Hong Kong because the top 30 rows are full of suits.
Yeah.
Paying $5,000 or $6,000 or whatever it happens to be. So it changes profoundly airline travel.
Yeah.
It changes profoundly business. And, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, you hear all these people saying, let's get back to normal. The Indian writer, Booker Prize winner for The God of Small Things, Arundhati Roy.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And she said something very interesting. She says, everybody's telling me, let's get back to normal. But normal is how we got here.
Oh, right.
So basically what she's saying is that the new normal ain't going to look like the old normal.
Yeah.
So and nor should it. And all these things are going to change.
But in terms of corporate culture, these business trips were part of their package. It was part of their normal perks of the job. So what happens to that? These perks are going to be taken out in some sort of other way, surely.
Yeah, well, hopefully they will subsidize podcasts and sponsor podcasts at great
good
length.
Idea. That's the best
podcast.
Idea I've had.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's the actual travel bit itself.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the cities, the destinations, it's going to have a massive impact on those. Cities like, I'm thinking about the likes of Dubai in the Middle East, and then the usual ones of Hong Kong, New York,
basically,
London.
Every city with a new airport is going to pay significantly. So think of all those steel and glass, beautiful new airports built in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They all were built around an airline business model, which had the business traveler subsidizing everybody else.
Mm.
And the business traveler was paying his bills or her bills on a credit card subsidized by his company as a cost, right?
Mm.
Now, from that comes taxi companies, bars and restaurants in the airports paying high rent to the airport owners. Then you have boutique hotels.
Yeah.
Then you have high-end restaurants. Then you have swanky bars, not pubs that we go to, but swanky bars, right? All of these were based at least, John, Monday to Thursday on somebody else paying the bill.
So yeah, they probably never dealt in cash at all. It was just purely
it was just a corporate credit card. Exactly, exactly, right? So, but think about it. Think about a city like Dublin, right? So many businesses in the center of town, high-end restaurants, bars, hotels, right? Consider the amount of boutique hotels that have been built in the last 12 months and the amount are still yet to be built, right? Our very first podcast, I think, a year and a half ago, was about the crane count in Dublin.
That's
the crane count in Dublin was about high-end offices
for
businessy type people and high-end hotels being built. All of those businesses don't make any sense now, right? They don't make any sense. So imagine the amount of these businesses that are going to go bust because of this. So, I mean, for you and I, the business traveler, it's kind of a caricature.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she or he is a fundamental driver of urban economics. Fundamental. And so many cities bias themselves or twisted themselves to face the business traveler.
Yeah.
So like, think about Ireland. What's the biggest building we've built recently? The conference centre.
Right, yeah, yeah.
There ain't
yeah.
going to be conferences. Think about it, right? All that thing in the docks in Dublin, it's all driven for people who are, as CNN would say, that type of person.
Yeah.
The business traveler.
So is this going to have an impact then on foreign investment here? So, because, you know, if you'd like, you have Apple, you have the Pfizer's, all those kind of companies that are based here that, you know, there's still going to be some sort of business travel. There has to be.
There is some
sort,
but it's, I mean, as I said, this global chief executive told me their business travel budget is going to be cut by 90%.
Mm.
So it means that only absolutely essential meetings will go ahead. And those absolutely essential meetings are probably the ones that will finish a deal, like seal a deal.
Yeah.
But the problem is, as you said, that business is personal.
Absolutely.
So you do business with people you know.
Yeah.
And typically you buy off people you like, which is why the salesman, who I've always thought is the great lamented hero in business.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
The person who can go out and sell. The person who can persuade you, change your mind, say, you know, you don't want to buy this, you want to buy that. That geezer,
yeah,
be it man or woman, they are the essential wizards of business because they take the products and they bring them to life.
Yeah.
And they actually create the value added. Now, how do they do that? They do that by mooching and smooching and sitting around and having drinks and doing all that sort of stuff.
Because yeah.
the vast majority...
It's all very tactile.
Well, think about it. The vast majority of products are identical.
Yeah.
The whole idea, like, there might be marginal differences. Laptops, marginal differences. Cars, marginal differences.
Yeah.
They're actually the same product. And what has happened because of technological innovation is that the technology has become shared at the production level. So your final product is more or less the same. The value added... It's the idea that you migrate from, not that I like this product,
yeah.
but I am like this product, right?
Right, right.
The, yeah. I am like this product is the salesman's genius.
Yeah.
That they get into your head with branding and marketing, human psychology, behavioral economics, understanding your weak points, understanding your strengths,
yeah.
figuring out you.
Being the problem solver.
And they sell,
yeah.
right? And you sell face to face. So what the businesses might gain on a spreadsheet, which is, less costs.
Yeah.
They could lose on this human basis, which is no sales.
Yeah, no, I see exactly what you mean, but there is an upside to this,
there's
surely.
Always, John, there's always winners and there's always losers. So the losers in this one are the restaurants, the bars, the high-end products that sold yeah. to the business traveler, particularly the airlines, number one. And also, just a note, Ireland made a huge play in airline leasing. You know the airline leasing?
Yeah, yeah. My cousin
that
works
looks
in that area.
Incredibly fragile now. Because if you think about it, airline leasing is all about getting a maximum price for a
sure.
an aircraft
yeah.
and leasing against it. Now, if aircrafts lose the business traveler, the
good
value
point.
Of aircraft has to fall because the revenue associated has to fall. Now, there's three or four. There was a company that started called GPA, Guinness Peat Aviation,
yeah,
which started by your man Tony Ryan
mm.
in Limerick around Shannon about 40 years ago, right? Out of that came many, many executives who understood the airline business, out of which came three or four big airline leasing companies, and Ireland became central to them.
Yeah.
It's hard to see those companies surviving because think about it, right? They've borrowed lots of money, they've lent it out against the aircraft.
Sure.
But the aircraft's value is a function of, are there people traveling? And if there are people traveling, how much are they paying?
Mm.
So now we know that we're getting less people traveling and paying considerably less. So the value of that asset, the aircraft, has to fall because the income associated with that asset has fallen completely. So in terms of losers, the airline business,
mm.
airports, all ancillary services that actually feed into the business traveler. But there are winners, John.
Yeah.
There's small Irish companies for whom, for example, the business trip was a massive cost.
Yeah.
Might be able to do things.
So there'll be, instead of going on the big business trip, there's going to be the local SMEs are going to benefit from people staying at home more.
And spending some of that, as you said, that perk budget.
Yeah.
That everyone needs a perk.
Yeah, yeah,
on
yeah.
something else.
And it's interesting, though. I mean, talking about SMEs, and you were talking about products earlier, being a lot of products being the same and stuff. You know, there's, you know, Zoom, for instance, has become a verb at this stage. I'm going to Zoom you.
And he's
Zunia. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. But there are Irish companies that do similar things, and we should be pushing them. And
really, I don't know, because
people like WorkAir. WorkAir are a company very similar. In fact, they do an awful lot more than Zoom. But, you know,
do the other like the takeaways and get a few pots of wine in and all that sort of stuff while you're sitting around.
But you know what I mean? There's, you know, WorkAir is one of many Irish companies, SMEs, who could, you know, really take advantage of this as well.
Well, WorkAir, well, let's explore that. I mean, it's interesting you talk about Zoom, the Zoomification of the world, of the business world, yeah. Right? What Zoom tells us is that it's so clear that in our capitalist world, there is not a tendency towards competition. As economics would say, you know, perfect competition and yada, yada, yada. There's a tendency towards monopoly. And that tendency is that when the world is open and free and everyone can pick and choose and move around, certain companies emerge as monopolists. And what they do is they elbow out all the rest of companies, right? And we see that in a variety of different things. Now, if post-COVID, we go back into less travel, we go back into less globalization, then maybe what we're going into, John, and this could be the long-term implication, we can come back to this in another podcast, is that the long-term implication of this sudden stop in economics and the sudden stop in the global economy will be the re-emergence of competition rather than monopoly. Just before you go, I have a little gem for you on Thursday. It's a conversation with one of the best, actually the top-rated Wall Street economist for many, many years, David Rosenberg, who now runs his own shop, Rosenberg & Associates, a wonderfully erudite economist. And now that Biden has announced Janet Yellen, the former head of the Fed, is going to be the Treasury Secretary, we're going to delve deeper into what all this means for the United States, where the United States is economically, and where the world is economically. So don't miss it. Thursday morning.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.